Ever think about like a group of people who just for centuries like held on to their beliefs, you know, even when everyone was against them, and then they decided to join up with this this much bigger movement?
It's a fascinating story, isn't it? And that's exactly what we're going to explore today, the story of the Waldensians.
Waldensians, yeah. A story of resilience, adaptation, and faith that spans centuries.
Absolutely. And today we'll be drawing insights from a lecture by Dr. Kevin E. Frederick, particularly focusing on that pivotal moment when the Waldensians decided to join the Reformation in the 16th century.
Okay, so our mission today, for you listening, is to really grasp those key factors that led them to this decision. Why did they choose to align with the Reformation around 1532?
Right, and we also want to understand what immediate impact this had on their identity. Like, how did joining this larger movement affect their sense of self?
And maybe even more importantly, how did their incredible spirit of perseverance, that's a hallmark of their history, how did that continue even after this huge change?
I think a quote highlighted in the lecture really gets at this idea. William Faulkner said, "The past is never dead. It is not even past."
Wow, yeah, that's powerful.
And it's so true for the Waldensians. Understanding their long and complicated history is essential for understanding why they embraced the Reformation and how it continued to shape their identity for centuries to come.
So let's start by getting a clear picture of who the Waldensians were before this pivotal moment in 1532. What were their defining characteristics?
Well, based on the work of historians Ewan Cameron and Gabriel Odisio, the pre-Reformation Waldensians were really characterized by a practice-oriented faith. A key element was their itinerant preachers known as Barbas, which means uncles.
Uncles, interesting. Okay, so these they were essentially the heart of the movement, right? What did their role actually involve?
They were really central. Their primary role was translating, interpreting, and preaching the gospels. And crucially, they did this in the common language of the people, not in Latin. They also lived by strict vows of poverty and celibacy.
Poverty and celibacy, that's dedication.
Definitely. And then the Waldensians themselves were known for their very literal interpretation of scripture.
So in an era of like complex theological debates, this literal interpretation must have made them stand out.
It definitely did. And their worship practices were also distinct. They typically held secret gatherings, often in people's homes, to avoid detection. The lecture also points out some key theological positions that set them apart from the Catholic Church. For instance, they objected to oath-taking and the death penalty, and they had a different understanding of the seven Roman Catholic sacraments.
And how did they approach things like confession or seeking spiritual guidance?
So instead of confessing to priests, Waldensian believers would confess annually to one of the Barbas. This really emphasizes that before the Reformation, their identity was less about a rigid theological system and more about the actual practices of their ministry.
So it was about action, not just words.
Precisely. Now, let's fast forward to 1532 and this really important synod meeting. What happened there?
This is the turning point, right?
It was. In 1532, the Waldensian Barbas held this crucial synod where they decided to align themselves with the Reformed movement coming out of Switzerland. The lecture really stresses this moment. At a place called Chamferon, they chose to abandon many of their long-held characteristics from before the Reformation.
Sounds like a big shift. What practices did they decide to leave behind?
Well, they moved away from that system of itinerant preaching by the Barbas, the vows of poverty and celibacy for their leaders that was discontinued, their strict literal interpretation of scripture. That started to change as they engaged with new theological ideas. Those secret gatherings in homes, that evolved as they adopted more public forms of worship, and their specific positions on things like oaths and sacraments shifted to be more in line with Reformed theology. Even that annual confession to the Barbas was replaced.
Wow, so much change. But I recall the lecture mentioned one crucial aspect that continued. What was that?
Yeah, despite all these changes, their commitment to translating, interpreting, and proclaiming the gospel in the language of the people remained absolutely central. That had always been a hallmark of the Barbas, and it continued to be a driving force.
So, what did the Waldensian Church start to look like after joining the Reformation? What were some of those key new elements they took on?
A lot changed. They started worshiping in fixed church buildings instead of those house meetings. And instead of just the traveling Barbas, they began assigning settled local pastors to lead congregations. They also adopted the Reformed practice of electing ruling elders from within each congregation to share in the leadership.
Okay. And their understanding of the Bible, you mentioned that evolved too.
Exactly. They moved away from just a literal reading. The Reformed approach introduced this idea of interpreting both the Old and New Testaments through the overall story of God's revelation in Jesus Christ. Plus, they started engaging with methods of literary and historical analysis, which offered new layers of understanding. This helped them to see the Old Testament not just as laws, but as pointing towards Christ, a central idea in Reformed thought.
All of this seems like such a huge shift. I mean, was there any pushback within the community to all these changes?
Oh, absolutely. The lecture points out that a good number of the older Barbists were actually against joining the Reformation.
Interesting. What were some of their main arguments against it? Were they worried about losing their unique identity, or were there specific theological points they disagreed with?
That's a great question. The sources don't give us a ton of details about their specific arguments, unfortunately, but we can imagine that for many of them, these changes represented a very real threat to their traditions and their sense of who they were.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And the resistance wasn't just among the leaders. When they shared these decisions with their congregations, they met with a lot of resistance. People were deeply attached to their traditions, you know. Those traveling celibate Barbists had been their spiritual guides for centuries. These changes were a lot to take in.
It wasn't just the flip of the switch, then.
Not at all. It took decades for most Waldensians to fully embrace Reformed theology and those new structures. The first Waldensian church building wasn't built until 1555, and a Reformed catechism for teaching wasn't introduced until the 1560s.
Wow. So their unique identity, at least in terms of specific practices, it did go through a big change. But the lecture argues that their witness continued. How?
It's an important distinction. Their pre-Reformation practices mostly disappeared. But the lecture says the Waldensians continued to be defined by the constant persecution they faced from the Catholic Church during the Counter-Reformation. This persecution started as early as the 1540s and went on for centuries in various parts of Europe. Waldensian communities were often targeted.
Where was this persecution most severe?
The Waldensians in the Kashan Alps, their original homeland, maintained a really strong community, enduring all these attacks. The lecture says they drew strength from their history, seeing themselves as this faithful remnant carrying on the legacy of their ancestors. And I think it's worth pausing to think about just how incredible that is. These people endured wave after wave of persecution, and yet their faith, their community, endured.
It's remarkable. So how did they manage to survive such persistent attacks?
Well, a few things helped. The remoteness of their mountain homeland gave them a natural advantage. The terrain made it hard for outsiders to get in, and they even developed their own guerrilla warfare tactics to defend themselves. And of course, their faith was a constant source of strength. They truly believed in God's protection.
The lecturer also mentioned the term ghettoization. What did that mean for the Waldensians?
Yeah, so all the rules and restrictions put on them led to this long period of isolation. They couldn't really interact with the outside world, and their access to higher education was limited. This ghettoization, as the lecturer calls it, lasted until the mid-19th century. And in a way, this forced isolation, even though it was imposed on them, it actually helped create a super close-knit, unified community. They relied on each other and fiercely protected their faith.
So even though their official structures were changing with the Reformation, this external pressure, this persecution, actually created a different kind of unique identity, right? One focused on resilience.
That's a great way to put it. Their ability to persevere through that relentless persecution became a central part of who they were. Now let's shift to leadership. The lecturer says that the Bardists didn't automatically become local pastors after the Reformation.
Makes sense. So who stepped into those roles?
This is fascinating. It was actually non-Waldensian pastors from Geneva starting in the 1540s. The Reformers saw the Waldensians as a true early form of their own movement. Get this. In just 30 years, Geneva sent about 60 pastors to the Waldensian communities, compared to only 80 to all of France. That shows how important it was for them to support the Waldensians.
That's a huge investment. So what about Waldensian leadership in the long term? Did they eventually take over?
Over time, more and more Waldensian men started training in Geneva to become pastors in their own churches. But through all these changes, strong pastoral leadership was crucial for keeping the community together and strong during those times of persecution.
The lecture gives the example of Pastor Henri Arnault. Can you tell us about him?
Henri Arnault is a legendary figure in Waldensian history. In the late 1600s, during a particularly brutal period, he actually organized the Waldensian men who had been exiled to Geneva into a fighting force. And in 1689, he led this group of around 900 people back to their homeland in what's known as the Glorious Return.
That sounds incredible. 900 people against such odds.
It really is. And they actually succeeded against the much larger armies of France and Savoy. Even when they were forced into exile again later on, Arnauld continued to lead them and help them build new communities in Germany. He was essential to their survival.
It's amazing how they held on to their faith through all of that. So even though their practices and some theology changed after joining the Reformation, there were still connections to their past. The lecture mentioned the annual Waldensian Synod meetings.
Those were so important for keeping that continuity and a sense of shared identity. They dated back to the Council of Bergamo in 1218, long before the Reformation. These yearly meetings helped them stay connected to their roots, discuss important matters, and provided a structure that spanned centuries.
That's amazing. And how did their leaders during the Counter-Reformation help people make sense of all the suffering?
The Waldensian leaders started connecting their experiences to the stories of suffering in the Old Testament, particularly the ancient Israelites. They even called themselves the Israel of the Alps. This gave them strength, a way to understand their trials, and reinforced their identity as God's people enduring through generations.
It just emphasizes that even with all the changes, that core belief in being God's chosen people stayed strong. What about today? What's the modern legacy of the Waldensians?
The lecture brings their story into the present. It talks about 10 Waldensian families who went to North Carolina in 1893. They faced debt and hardships, but they built a thriving community over decades, contributing to their region's economy and social life. That same strength, perseverance, and community spirit are still seen in Waldensian churches all over the world.
It makes you think, even if we aren't facing the same kind of religious persecution today, how do we keep our own faith and values strong in the face of modern challenges?
That's such a relevant question, and it brings us back to Faulkner's quote. The struggles and spirit of the Waldensians still offer us valuable lessons.
To sum up our deep dive today, their decision to join the Reformation was a huge turning point, leading to big changes. But their unwavering faith and resilience, shaped by their unique practices and persecution, that didn't just continue, it became even more central to who they were.
And so, a final thought for you listening. As you think about the Waldensians, what aspects of your own background, your family, or your community have been most important in shaping its identity and ability to adapt to change? What can we learn from their story, from their ability to change, while still holding on to who they are?
It's really a story that can resonate with anyone, I think. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.